Omar D. Conger, 1922, Black River. And as a note to this poem is an epigraph that appears in the book. I'll read that. The Omar D. Conger was docked in Port Huron, Michigan, when a boiler exploded. The ship was blown to pieces. A 200-pound radiator plummeted into the Falk undertaking parlors during a funeral service. That's the epigraph. Here's the poem. Some said the radiator was a message from God, which caused more than a few arguments. Even among those who believed in a radiant God capable of flinging a heater through a funeral parlor, there were some who said the coming of the radiator was an expression of God's solidarity with those who grieved, and some who said the coming was the beginning of an 11th plague. Whether it was wrath or sympathy, darkness or radiance, hardly made sense to others who claimed it was only coincidence. But even some who favored coincidence came to feel differently about the word. They heard only coincide, which they mouthed silently to themselves, slipping in occasional variations, homicide, suicide, genocide, so many sides. For them, the lexicon had changed. A word was redefined by tragedy, and in certain families in Port Huron, some smoldering remnant of that day lives in the language of those who survived the survivors. For them, every coincidence is a kind of death.
Harborless, your new poetry collection that is coming out by Wayne State University Press. It's all about Great Lakes shipwrecks. And at first, I'm going to tell you, Cindy, when I first picked that up, I thought, really, a whole collection just about shipwrecks? Is this going to get repetitive? And when I read your poems, everyone was so completely unique. Yeah, a whole different way of looking at shipwrecks. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
And I've got to ask, why all these shipwrecks? What's your fascination with shipwrecks? Where does that come from?
Well, probably several places. I grew up in Michigan, camping near the lakes, swimming in the lakes. And my grandma grew up in Oceana County. We still have family land there. And so I grew up swimming in Lake Michigan near where the channel for Stony Creek empties into Lake Michigan. And every summer when we went there, I always saw the remains of this wreck. Different parts of it, sand would shift, wave action would change what was visible and what was hidden. But parts of this wreck were always there, and this great mystery surrounded it and a great fascination. So that image burned itself into me. My great grandpa, my grandma's father, sailed the lakes on a U.S. Corps of Engineers tug in the 20s to earn money so that my grandma could go to college at Michigan State College, Michigan Agricultural College, in the 1920s. And he sailed the lakes to earn money, but he loved it too. So I heard some of her stories that were his stories, and those stories were in me. And I don't think it's so unusual for a poet to write about shipwrecks. There's some history with that. When I think about Elizabeth Bishop and Crusoe in England, Gerald Manley Hopkins, who wrote the really now famous The Wreck of the Deutschland, and that poem is, he hadn't written poems for like 7 years. And then there was this shipwreck at the mouth of the Thames, and a lot of people died. But he was most fascinated with the story of these five nuns on board who died. This was 1875, and he the nuns were on the ship because they'd fled Germany. They were fleeing religious persecution in Germany, and so Hopkins really struggled with that. He was concerned about it. Concerned with it and a little intrigued by it to think, to try to, he was wrestling with why five nuns who were fleeing religious persecution died on this ship. So there's a history there with poetry. I think Shelley was on his sailboat. He wasn't even 30 years old, and he got caught in a summer storm, and he drowned. So it's not new for a poet.
No, I think we've been fascinated with shipwrecks, movies, books, poetry. There's a whole industry almost around it. So no argument there. I hadn't come across an entire collection of poetry about it, though. Is that unique, or did any of these authors do an entire collection, or these are just individual poems?
I haven't found any other entire collections.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. And certainly, you know, these poems I've mentioned and the poets I've referenced, they're writing about ocean wrecks.
Mm.
And so the poetry of the Great Lakes, I think that is unique.
So why do you think we are so fascinated with shipwrecks? You know, when you go up to the UP in that area, Edmund Fitzgerald, I mean, there's just so much fascination with it. Why is that?
Yeah, there is. I think in some ways we're always, or at least often, fascinated by tragedy. And I think that there's something even more mysterious about tragedy in the lakes, tragedy in deep water, because what sinks, what settles, what drowns almost rests in another realm. You know, it's different than a car accident that has its horrors, but then gets cleaned up. It's part of this sort of earth, part of this land, part of our territory. It's where we tread. But when a ship sinks, it heads elsewhere into the unknowable deep. And I think there's great mystery there.
And yet it's still there and we can explore it. And sometimes, you know, like with the Titanic, you find things that almost don't seem to have moved, kind of still in time.
Yes.
When you did research on these shipwrecks, now, do you scuba dive or is this, you'd go into archives? Some, I believe you've invented or reinvented, but these are based on real shipwrecks. So tell me about your research process.
I don't dive. I don't think I want to. I think that for me would feel like going to the moon. And I did do a lot of research and read, you know, books that were mostly sort of compilations, summaries, a catalog of wrecks with sort of bare details. And what I found is that most of these wrecks, I mean, in some ways there's a similarity in inciting action. They either get caught in a storm, or there's a fire, then explosion, or there's a collision. And sometimes there's a collision because there's a storm, or there's a fire because there's a storm, or there's a fire because there's a collision. So even the inciting action is often related or connected. So a lot of these reports were dry and at least very similar, but then sometimes I'd run across some nugget of information that just was fascinating, such as that story about the Omar D. Conger and the radiator that plummeted into this funeral parlor during a funeral service. It's wild. And those nuggets I'd write down and think, okay, I will build a poem around that or include that image in a poem. So some of these poems, they all have some nugget of historical accuracy. And then they move into imaginative territory. And some of them have more accuracy than others.
That's a poet's right.
Right.
So is there a shipwreck out of all of these that you looked into? Is there one that haunts you the most?
Well, many of them do, and really they all do. But the Puabic, there's a lot of imagery associated with the Puabic. When I think about the Puabic, I think about the catalog of items, the things that were found when divers finally found the wreck. That went down in 1865. For a long time, they couldn't find it. When they did, divers swam from room to room. And there had been many passengers on that boat when it went down. And divers found whole scenes, preserved scenes. So in one space, there was a table. There were people still sitting around the table.
Wow.
And then on the table, there were cards, playing cards, spread, distributed on the table. These people were in the middle of playing a card game when the ship went down, and the cards are still there. There were still coins in the pockets of men's trousers. There were guns from the Civil War, revolvers. So the stuff of life in 1865 went down with that boat and was preserved in that cold water, which is fascinating.
I think that's it. I think that's why we get so fascinated with shipwrecks rather than other types of wrecks or accidents. It's that frozen moment in time. I was going to ask you too, Cindy, the way you've arranged this poetry collection, sound theory, scent theory, game theory. Talk about these theories.
For the most part, every poem in this book is titled after the name of the ship and the year the ship went down. At some point in this project, I wrote a poem about this imagined deckhand. And then I thought, well, what do I do with that? It doesn't really fit in, because every other poem is titled after the name of the ship and the year it went down. So it didn't seem like I was going to be able to use it. And then I thought, well, you know, if I did a series of these, they could serve as kind of section breaks in a way, even though there aren't official section breaks. They could serve as kind of breaker pages or breaker poems. They could serve, this deckhand could become a character for a reader to follow through the book. Somebody who appears and reappears, a character who doesn't drown at the end of every poem. So I think those poems serve a few functions. And yes, there are six of them. And so I'm able to explore one life more imaginatively.
And as this book comes out, are you planning any kind of special launch or book tours? Any chance of coming to Southwest Michigan?
Yes, I will be in Kalamazoo a couple times in May. I think they're both Thursday nights. I'll be there in May at the Book, and I'll be there maybe a week later at the Ransom Library. On both of those occasions, I'll be reading with another poet from Michigan, Kathleen McGookey.
Ah, another of our favorites.
Yeah.
Upcoming projects. Now that you've written about shipwrecks, what's next?
Well, I'm working on a new project, another project-based project. Not all poems are written from a sort of project perspective, but this one involves the history of my grandmother, who I mentioned went to Michigan Agricultural College in the 1920s. After college, she worked for the Michigan Tuberculosis Association, and she traveled throughout the state, throughout the Lower Peninsula and the Upper Peninsula, driving around on bad roads in her father's Model A, talking to groups of people, primarily school children, but also groups of adults in auditoriums at night, about healthy ways of living. Now, that odd thing was that she was sort of given this character to inhabit. The Tuberculosis Association had given her a costume and a name. She was Princess Watasa. And so when she appeared before groups, she was in character. She was playing Indian. And this was in the late 20s. And there's some complicated history associated with that. And I'm exploring that complicated history.
In poetry or prose?
Poetry. So again, there will be elements of historical accuracy and then a lot of imagination. And what's really fascinating is I was telling a friend of mine about this project, and he said, well, you might like this to read this essay I wrote. So he sent me a PDF of the essay. And the essay, it's a wonderful essay, and he was writing about a group of Indians in northern Wisconsin on the Mole Lake Reservation in Wisconsin. So, and he was writing about, in some sense, this notion of sort of playing Indian. At least that figures in this essay. And he thought it would be, I might find something meaningful in it as I am researching things for this project. But as I read it, shipwrecks keep returning to me, because there's an anecdote really central to the essay. In the second half of the 1800s, there's a lot of history with this tribe, with struggles they have had with the U.S. government in claiming territory and so forth. So in the late 1800s, there was this treaty drawn up, and the Indians on Mole Lake Reservation claim that later, when this reservation was allotted to them, that they said, look, you've given us less than a quarter of the reservation that we're due. We're due 12 square miles, and you've given us less than a quarter of that. But they couldn't prove it because there were only two copies of this treaty. And one was sent with a trader who, I think, you know, by way of mail, it was supposed to make its way somewhere to Washington, D.C., I think. But it never made it there because the trader either lost it or, you know, destroyed it. It's unclear what happened to that copy. But the other copy was sent with this U.S. agent who was on his way back to D.C. So the agent, there were two maps for this treaty. And one of those maps was on this ship with the agent, and the ship went down in the lake.
Mm.
And so it's at the bottom of Lake Michigan somewhere. To this day, these Indians in Mole Lake, Wisconsin, can't prove this. There's been some talk about chartering a submarine to go down there and find this lost map. So I'm starting this whole new project, and I can't get away from shipwrecks, which is wonderful.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us, Cindy, and looking forward to hearing you at BookBug and Ransom Library.
I'm looking forward to that, too. Thank you very much.